Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is Talk Back, which means that throughout the program, we invite you to call in and share your comments, your points of view, your questions on any of the variety of topics we normally cover. Our call-in number in Canada and the United States is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. We also want to remind you that we have several ways to listen to this program in live each day. And the two easiest ways would be to listen over the internet if you're not by a radio station, or call. Here are the two numbers you should write down. Always keep them with you because you never know when you're going to be on the go. You're out someplace, but you think, I'd like to call in and listen. 401-347-0456. 401-347-0456. Or 712-432-7231. That's 712-432-7231. Today I'm going to talk about how to block the dangerous inflammatory signaling in your body by Joyen Wachowski from Life Extension. I'm also going to talk about how to boost your energy because most people talk about being fatigued, and rightly so, based upon your age, your diet, your stress levels, the amount of exercise. So, Safely Boosting Your Energy Reserves by Margaret Powell. If time permits, an in-depth discussion on the surprising effects of probiotics, the good bacteria, but not in your intestinal tract. Yet, typically when we think of probiotics, we think, yeah, I need those for my intestine. You do. But now new research shows that they can play a protective role against a wide range of common disorders. Michael Downey with that. From our environmental segment today, Reasons We Should Fear the Worst from Fukushima by Professor Harvey Wasserman. And we'll, from EcoWatch, we'll share that with you. And also from our environmental segment today, Oil on the Tracks, an article by Ben Jervey of DeSmog Blog. More oil spills from rail cars last year than the previous 40 years. Whoa. And they try to say it's safe to transport those oils, tar sands. No, it's not. As you can see, we have a lot to share, including your questions and comments. I received an email from a J.J. Chambers. He says this. Gary, your sugar program you recently did was excellent. I thought you might like to see these ads. Will we see these ads again after the passage of the Trans-Pacific Partnership? Now, I've seen these ads before when I was doing an article challenging the legitimacy of the American Dietetic Association. I am a registered dietitian. That was my first a school that I graduated from outside of college. I'm talking about in the nutrition world. And as such, I saw how terrible the curriculums were, how much misinformation they shared, and yet these are the people responsible for providing the nutrition for people in hospitals, nursing homes, and other places, schools. And several were for full-page ads for sugar. Here's one. Now, you can't see this, but it's a mother smiling, looking, and I'm going to guess a two-year-old. And the ad says, for a better start to life, start cola early. Quote, how soon is too soon? Not soon enough. Laboratory tests over the last few years have proven that babies that start drinking soda during their early formative period have a much higher chance of gaining acceptance and fitting in during those awkward preteen and teen years. So do yourself a favor. Do your child a favor. Start them on a strict regimen of sodas and other sugary carbonated beverages right now for a lifetime of guaranteed happiness. sponsored by the Soda Pop Board of America. And it's from Coca-Cola. Then there's another one. This has got to be a six-month-old baby holding 7-Up in its mouth with a mother's hand. That's all you see in the ad. Here's what the ad says. Why we have the youngest customers in the business. Nothing does it like 7-Up. And then it goes on to talk about how, once again, start your baby off with 7-Up early. Now, of course, there's about 11 teaspoons of sugar in there. So the answer to your question, J.J. Chambers, is this. Yes, we will see these and even worse ads coming back if the Trans-Pacific Partnership Treaty passes. But we'll see a lot of things happen. First, if you are a believer in the power of the Constitution, it'll be shredded. The Bill of Rights will be non-existent. And all of your special rights that you took for granted, freedom of speech, gone. Habeas corpus, gone. But those two are gone now, for all intents and purposes. And any product that any corporation in their 75,000 corporations that would be covered in Europe alone under this particular agreement, the North Atlantic Agreement, Trans-Pacific, has all those thousands and thousands of corporations in those countries around the Pacific. So let's just, I'll give you an example. Let's say that they want to import into the United States shrimp. But these shrimp come from Thailand, from fish ponds, and there's no environmental controls. And as a result, they can put massive amounts of antibiotic, growth-stimulating hormones, anything they want into the water in order to get their fish to market quickly. If we decide, well, we have to, you know, inspect these shrimp and see if they have bacteria or viruses or parasites that could be harmful, they'll say, no, you can't. And you say, well, we've done some tests and we find that these shrimp are dangerous. They're poisonous. Too bad. We're not going to allow them in. Okay. Then suddenly that state or the federal government gets sued by the manufacturer of those shrimp. And then it doesn't go to any court in the United States. It goes to a special arbitrator. And this arbitrator will be from the manufacturer. There are all lawyers working for the major Trans-Pacific Partnership corporations. There's no review. There's no appeal. Now, what do you think a lawyer working throughout their career for the corporate interests is going to weigh in on? It's already happened hundreds of times. So now this company says, well, we have expected to make $200 million a year, and so we lost over the next 5 years $1 billion. Now you're awarded a judgment of $1 billion. You can't appeal it. Now imagine how many thousands upon tens of thousands of products or services that would come into the United States that would just destroy our environment, our health. And you'd say to your politicians, to your president, we're hurting. We're dying. We're sick. Our environment has been destroyed. Our forests have been raped. Can't you do something? And say, no. And Nancy Pelosi, isn't she the greatest corporate politician you've ever seen in your life? We don't know what's in the bill, but once we make it law, then we'll read it. Wasn't that her famous statement? Of course it is. And so there won't be any way out of it. That is how bad it's going to get. So feeding sugar through a soft drink to your kid, that's minor compared to what's coming at you. From Health and Nutrition, low vitamin D levels cause early bone aging. Now, this is from Dr. Michael Smith, a medical doctor, and he is stating that we have too many people in America who have brittle bones and are prone to fracture. He is correct. And he's saying that in a major study that was just finished, they compared the bone obtained from normal individuals and those that were deficient in vitamin D. And what they found was that normal bone remodeling, which is a cycle of bone breakdown and repair, is necessary for preserving healthy bones as we age. But the researchers found that low vitamin D is associated with impaired remodeling, or a form of osteorebuilding. And further testing revealed that the group that was deficient in vitamin D, they were more likely to have 31% more cracks in their bones. So if you want to have healthier, stronger bones, make sure you get your vitamin D every day. Now, I know many of you are using polyphenols. Those are the wonderful chemicals that are naturally occurring in a lot of fruits and vegetables, and especially the proanthocyanidins, catechins, theoflavins, flavanols. They're all associated with a 60% reduction in cardiovascular disease risk. That's according to the latest peer-reviewed article in Nutrition, Metabolism, and Cardiovascular Disease. So listen again. The more of the polyphenols you take in from fruits and vegetables, the lower your risk of heart disease. Quote from the study, previous studies have demonstrated that polyphenols and their metabolites can reduce blood pressure as well as markers for oxidation and inflammation. This was done at the University of Barcelona in Spain. Quote, they may prevent or improve endothelial dysfunction, not only by reducing the expression of NADPH oxidase, that's cellular damage, but also by increasing antioxidant enzyme activity and anti-inflammatory effect and bioavailability of nitric oxide by inhibiting low-density lipoproteins, end quote. So in just lay language, here's what it says. When you consume foods that are rich in polyphenolic compounds, you're going to have better functioning heart, including modulation of various cardiovascular parameters like vascular and platelet function, blood pressure, plasma lipid profile, oxidative stress, inflammation, and what I've talked about so many times, endothelial function. So get your polyphenols. But then again, those of you who are using red and green compounds, you're getting them, and a lot of them. Poor breakfast in youth, that's most kids, linked to metabolic syndrome in adulthood. From Sweden's Umeå University, published in the peer-reviewed journal Public Health Nutrition. Well, we know that you need a good breakfast. Everyone does. Most people don't have it. Most young people who were studied show that they rush off without eating their breakfast. Most of them will drink something, coffee, a soft drink, but they're not sitting down and having a healthy breakfast or even a healthy smoothie. More often not, the people who have a healthy smoothie are the people who have one after they exercise. But that's the younger people. Older people generally don't have healthy breakfasts either. They generally have bacon and eggs, coffee, and toast. Bad idea. Lots of overprocessed pro-inflammatory items in the food. And then you have a lot of people who eat a sugary donut or sugar in their coffee or sugar cereal, something sweet. Well, that leads to obesity, and that also increases metabolic syndrome. And what they're saying here is that when you don't have a healthy breakfast, about 27 years later, that would put you around, let's say, 32, 33 years old, you're going to end up with metabolic syndrome or diabetes, and hence heart disease. Melatonin is a very important hormone. It's secreted from the pineal gland in the middle of the brain. It helps protect the brain. But a new study, I read in Science Daily, this was done at the Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit, and it says, and published in PLOS One, it says, quote, an early stage study shows melatonin, a hormone that regulates the body's sleep and awake cycles, may have the potential to help slow the growth of breast cancer tumors. That's good news. So anything that can help someone with breast cancer is good. And this was only a 21-day program, and it wasn't even at a high doses. When I counsel people who have breast cancer, it's generally in the range of 5 to 10 milligrams a night, plus a lot more. This was just with this. So could you imagine what the good results would have been had they even had a higher level? New research on a natural plant compound that prevents Alzheimer's disease in mice. Now, this is from the Salk Institute for Biological Studies. Quote, a chemical that's found in fruits and vegetables, from strawberries to cucumbers, appears to stop memory loss that accompanies Alzheimer's disease in mice. And in the experiments, they took a look at a simple flavanol called Fistin, F-I-S-T-I-N, F-I-S-E-T-I-N, and that was able to prevent the progression of memory and learning impairments. That is good. Now, it didn't alter the formation of amyloid plaques in the brain. Those are the proteins that accumulate. They're blamed for Alzheimer's. But that means that just the fact that you want to help someone with Alzheimer's or dementia, you could use that. Well, there are a lot of other things we can use for people to get rid of the amyloid plaques. So that's, at least it's a good first start, suggesting people could do something like take in a nutrient that's easy to get, non-toxic, inexpensive. And finally, a new study identifies benefit of hemp oil. Here's what it says. This is from the Journal of the Agriculture and Food Chemistry, and they looked at the oil of hemp seed, and a group of researchers found that it had some benefits, including turning off inflammation in the body, and that's a good thing. And it was rich in health-promoting properties, and it also contained good amounts of the omega-3 fatty acids, which can help prevent coronary heart disease. So, all good. By the way, one last thing. Dried plums slow bone loss and aging. This is from GreenMed Info, Case Adams, and it says, quote, several recent studies have confirmed that traditional Oriental medicine has known for centuries that dried plums have the capacity to prevent even reverse bone loss that can occur in our later years. Florida State University researchers tested a group of hundreds of women, and they were 1 to 10 years into menopause. They were divided into two groups who were given 100 grams of dried plums per day, and the other group were given 100 grams of dried apples per day for a year. And after doing bone scans at 3 points, at the beginning, 6 months, and 3 months at the year, they find that the dried plum group showed significantly greater bone mineral density than those given the dried apples. So, dried plums helps you prevent osteoporosis, and it's a really good nutrient. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. I'm going to take a break, come back, take some questions. Our number to call in, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And I'll also give you the latest on why we should fear the worst from Fukushima. Back in a moment.
Welcome on here.
Let's say hello to Anne from New Jersey. Hi, Anne.
Thank you, Gary, for taking my call. My question is, I take a lot of herbal extract, and they're extracted with alcohol, and I was wondering if that's a problem.
Generally, it is not, but if you're concerned, you can get herbal extracts in triple deionized vegetable glycerin. It is a liquid, and it's vegan and kosher, and you could get it that way. Alcohol only becomes a problem if you're taking a lot of an herbal extract, but if you're just taking a few drops, 10, 15 drops, no, that wouldn't be a problem.
But if you're, thank you very much.
But otherwise, if you did choose to have an alternative, there are alternatives to alcohol extracts. Okay? All the best to you. I promised you I'd give you some information on turning off inflammation, then on energy. And what we know now is that if I had to say one single biochemical process was the cause of Alzheimer's, heart disease, the initiator of cancer, diabetes, and arthritis, I would say that it is inflammation. In the United States, the way we deal with inflammation is we take something like a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory or the glucocorticoids that target acute pain. The trouble is, look at the side effects. Death is a side effect. So if we wanted to turn off pain naturally, how can we do it? Well, there's three simple things, and I've kept it just three because these are known to work well, and they've been used for a long time, and they're very safe. One is turmeric oil. The second is ginger, and the third is curcumin. Cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N. And they work by blocking multiple pathways of the inflammatory signaling process. They deliver benefits that no drug can. No COX or LOX enzymes, which in turn curtails secretion of the prostaglandin and leukotriene's signaling molecules. No. All you have to do is know if you've got pain, any kind of pain, curcumin, ginger, and turmeric oil can help stop that pain. It can also turn off arthritis inflammation, heart disease inflammation, cancer inflammation. It's terrific, and it works in a matter of weeks. So those are the nutrients that make a difference because they work on the underlying source of it. Now, we know if you don't check inflammation, when you take a roll, you take a French fry, you eat pizza, that's all causing inflammation. The end result is a tipping of signaling molecules known as prostaglandins and leukotrienes. And the problem with the drug therapy approach is that they inhibit one of the steps involved in chronic inflammation. For example, when you take a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, it'll inhibit the production of prostaglandin signaling molecules by blocking enzymes called COX-1 and COX-2, but they do not inhibit production of leukotriene signaling molecules. Curcumin and turmeric oil and ginger work together to block all signaling pathways. Hence, they are the single best way of helping the body with a broad-spectrum anti-inflammation approach. Now, is this one study or two? No. There's over 2,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature supporting this. 2,000 studies. So you could help suppress cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer, liver, skin, colon, lung cancers, by interfering at every stage of their development and progression and metastasis. No drug could do that. Also in the process, it works on your behalf by stopping platelet aggregation. Remember, inflammation leads to heart disease. And both curcumin, ginger, and turmeric all have the effect of preventing cardiovascular disease. And it helps reduce platelet aggregation, the tendency of blood cells to clump together. And it doesn't take a lot to do that. But the drugs that do that give you side effects. In fact, for arthritis, the approach I just gave you, like curcumin, it also inhibits cartilage breakdown by the body in arthritis. Doesn't take a lot. 500 milligrams of curcumin daily could make a difference. Ginger, about, we're looking at somewhere of a ginger extract, 350 milligrams daily. And that way you can help yourself. All right? Turn off the oil. Or excuse me, turn off the inflammation with those three nutrients. Now, we'd all like to have more energy. And the older we get, the more tired we get. And the problem is that our energy and tiredness are directly related to the amount of physical activity or lack thereof, the kinds of foods and the amount of food, combination of food, the quality of our digestion, metabolism, the quality of the liquids we consume, how much and when. All these things make a difference. The level of stress that we're under, because the more stress you're under, the more adrenaline is going to be secreted, and that uses up your energy supply. At the source of all this is what is called ATP, adenosine triphosphate. That's your actual source of energy. So how do you get more of this ATP to work for you? How to get more energy? Well, there's a simple medicinal mushroom. It's called cordyceps. Cordy, C-O-R-D-Y, ceps, E-P-S. Also, ginseng. Ginseng root provides sustainable energy by utilizing your body's own energy resources. Whether you have mental, emotional, physical stress, then I would suggest those two. They can make a big difference. So you want to recharge your energy levels? Cordyceps and Panax, P-A-N-A-X, ginseng. And here's what you should know. Cordyceps is one of the most important forms of nutrition taken in China. It's taken in foods. It's also taken in Chinese medicine in powdered form. And they use it for cancer. They use it for metabolic modulation, for energy production. How does it work? Simple. By raising your ATP, remember adenosine triphosphate, especially when you're stressed, that helps you. It boosts your ATP level. That's cordyceps boosts your ATP level and your blood flow. It lowers the level of lactic acid. That's what causes the fatigue, and that's what causes the pain in your muscles. It increases insulin sensitivity. The more sensitive your cells are to insulin, the faster and more completely they take up sugar from your blood. That's all important. So those are the two ways that you can make sure that you get your energy back into your body. Get your ATP working on your behalf. Inexpensive, easy to use, and safe. All right? I'm Gary Nall. Let's say hello to Rochelle from South Carolina. Hi, Rochelle.
Hi, Gary.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you. All right, just 36-year listener, Gary. My question is this. You were talking, I think, about 2 years ago about a documentary you're doing on mental illness. I forget the name of it. It had a very interesting name.
Manufacturing Madness.
Is that it? Okay,
yes.
Well, yeah, you would know. Okay, you know, I have suffered from mental illness, and I would like to contribute. If you would like to interview me, I would like to contribute to that documentary in some way.
All right. Well, everyone has a story to tell who's been through any form of diagnosis and treatment within the Orthodox field, and we have been working thus far on the psychiatric model. For example, one part of this film is the pathologizing of African Americans by psychiatry, and we filmed everything from the beginning of our country's constitutional efforts with Benjamin Russ, who signed a Declaration of Independence, who was a physician, who was the first psychiatrist. He was the one who coined the term nigritude, that meant that you had a color difference because you had leprosy, and therefore all these strange, bizarre, and torturous ways of overcoming it. And the entire history of how the mental health field has actually victimized African Americans by stigmatizing them simply by their color. And that's just one part. Another is where we took people in, a very healthy person, into 12 board-certified psychiatrists' office, and within 5 minutes they had all diagnosed this person, each one differently, and give them a prescription. When confronted later on in the street, they said, well, it's all subjective anyhow. Well, if it's subjective, why didn't you subject the person saying they're fine, talk about their issues, their problems in life, the normal ups and downs, with someone in a non-drug way? But that's not how medicine and sickness is done. So if you have a story to tell that can help us better illustrate the plight of those who've suffered at the hands of the psychiatric community or mental health community, we're happy to hear from you. And what you should do is just email Valerie or Richard@GaryNull.com. It's that simple. And give him your story and your information, because in the next 2 months, we'll start our final stage of filming. Okay, thank you. I appreciate your input.
Okay, Gary, can I just say one thing?
Sure.
Okay, I'll just put this very succinctly. When my mother was 47 years old, she had over 80 shock treatments. They completely fried her brains. She was completely senile and incontinent by the time she was 61. Me, my first psychiatrist, I was sexually abused by my first psychiatrist. Okay, I sued him. He did not lose his license. And I won I was paid by his malpractice insurance companies, like I said, he did not lose his license, and now he died. But so that's two generations, and I definitely will contact you, and I definitely do have a story to tell.
Well, just keep in mind, you have been abused by a system and by individuals within that system who are supposed to be overseeing people's recovery. Imagine being abused by apartheid, historically in South Africa, currently in the West Bank and Gaza. Not for a year, not for two generations, but for five or six generations. Imagine the abuse that's come from people, African Americans, before they were African Americans, when they were Africans, by the Dutch, by the Irish, by the Spanish. Think of all the different abuses that have occurred against Native Americans. Think of the abuses that occurred for over 300 years against women during the height of the Inquisition. In one village in France, they celebrated when thousands were killed in one day for witchcraft. It's this illusion that we live with in our society, that authorities are right and we should not challenge them because they're officially acknowledged as being the only providers of truth. Therefore, when someone lies and we catch them in the lie, they're forgiven of that lie or any consequence. Like Clapper, the head of the National Security Agency, lies before Congress under oath, nothing happens to him. And yet, if you lied under oath, you get hit with perjury. There's a way of looking at life. It was Shakespeare and Othello who said, reputation is an idle and most false imposition, oft got without merit and lost without deserving. But I like what Somerset Maugham said. He said, it is dangerous to let the public behind the scenes. They are easily disillusioned, and then they are angry with you, for it was the illusion they loved. And so we are, as a society, enamored by the idea that we have institutions and honorable people within those institutions who are there to help us and serve us. We believe that the curriculum is the right one for our children, the teachers are doing the best they can, and the supervisors are there to make sure it all works. And then we graduate a group of idiots. And instead of looking at what's wrong, if we looked at everything that was wrong, we couldn't. You don't want to open that door because you couldn't prepare yourself for the complete failure of an institution that has betrayed you. We believe that the bank should have our money, but then they don't give us any interest. How much interest do you earn in any account you have? Zero. Why keep your money there? Because the illusion that somehow those people are protecting your money. Want to bet? Want to bet that if your money's there when there's a run on the bank, that you won't get any of that money back? None. Everything is a lie. Our politicians lie. The media is biased. Celebrities are stupid, more often than not, and a few exceptions, but just as dumb as bricks. They're completely narcissistic. They don't live in the same world we do. Look at Justin Bieber's and some of these other little narcissistic punks. Look at the way we conduct ourselves. Look at the reality shows. Look at the demonic approach to this. Look at the egocentric nature of all models of behavior currently being promoted and glorified. The over-masculine male. You know, let's shoot first, beat someone up, and then we'll decide if we were right. And yet people passively watch this. So think of how easy it is then to get caught up into that, and then one day you're diagnosed with an illness. It's not you or your mother who got electroconvulsive therapy, but maybe it's an innocent teenager out of Michigan that took a teen screen and ended up institutionalized for 6 months. Or maybe it's someone who jaywalked and now finds themselves in jail and can't afford to get out. And so now they're in a debtor's prison, and the probation department is a privatized probation department that when they don't pay the money, put them back in jail. And you think, well, how can a for-profit corporation put you in jail? Isn't that supposed to go through a judge? Doesn't have to anymore.
Right.
They control this. So when I look at our society, I look at a completely, totally, 100% dysfunctional society where every major institution, you cannot name me a single institution that has not betrayed the people that trust it. You can't name one. Try. I challenge you. Show me an institution that has not betrayed the people. Give me one.
I can't.
You can't because it doesn't exist. So if our institutions have betrayed us and we are coddled to the institution for all of our direction, our belief, our information, then imagine then how challenging it is for the individuals who choose to maintain their sense of independence and objectivity in how they approach life. So that's why we're telling these stories. That's why we're doing these films. In Manufacturing Madness, we will show that the entire psychiatric field is one giant fraud. The only thing that would be good for all psychiatrists, if they had 3,000 electroconvulsive shots at the same time getting 3 million milligrams of Prozac, that might do them good. Outside of that, I have no use for anyone in the psychiatric field. I think I make myself clear, but I do more than that. I will show you how fraudulent and corrupt the entire system is. The school teacher that says, little Johnny, you're not paying attention. You must have ADD and ADHD. Let's get you on Ritalin. Let's take you
to the
school psychologist.
Go to the nurse's office.
Yeah. So we're going to expose all this. We won't change anything, but at least those who want the truth will have it. The rest don't want the truth, so they'll be living the life they deserve. Thanks for your call.
That's my passion, Gary. And did you ever hear the book Psychopaths Go to Work?
No.
Okay, well, that's my psychiatrist. Psychopaths go to work.
Well, then they must go to work in Congress or our state legislatures. Let's say hello now to... Catalin from Maryland. Hi, Catalin.
Hello.
Your turn.
Great, thanks. My question is, well, I was told by my gynecologist that a lack of vitamin D can cause bacterial vaginosis, something that I've been suffering from this year. I was put on antibiotics, but they didn't seem to work. So my question is, how much vitamin D should I take at 18, and what foods can I take to fight this infection?
The best way of approaching it would be to get between 1 to 2,000 units a day of vitamin D.
Okay.
That's your best approach. But infections generally, especially reproductive infections, you should be looking at taking high-quality probiotics twice a day. All right? Mm-hmm. That's always important. So I would do that. I would also suggest that you take glutamine, grapeseed extract, caprylic, that's with a C, C-A-P-R-I, caprylic acid, oil, black cumin seed oil, 1 teaspoon in the morning, 1 in the afternoon, vitamin C, 5 times a day, right up to bowel tolerance, and bring it back down so you don't end up with diarrhea. Quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, 500 milligrams, 4 times a day. And you can take the omega-3, by the way, in vegetarian capsules, vegetarian oil, and or from fish oil, either one. That's how it I would approach it. All the best to you. Let's say hello to Chenise from Vermont. Hi, Chenise.
Hello. Hi. Gary?
Yes.
Hi. I would like to know if you recommend for people who have never had a chance to develop a career because they've raised children most of their youth, and they would like to start a career in holistic nutrition. Do you think this is a good time to do that right now?
Absolutely. You have more people seeking the advice and counsel of those who have a qualified background, meaning a legitimate background, not a mail order background, not one of these come, occasionally and take an all-day seminar and read a few books and you're suddenly a health counselor. That's nonsense. I believe that you have to, I would suggest that you get yourself a BS in clinical nutrition, and that will give you the basis. And then there are some outstanding courses that you can take. Jonathan Wright, Alan Gaby from Townsend Letter for Doctors and Patients give those. They're terrific.
Okay.
And easy to understand. And that way, in no time at all. Do you have a college degree?
I have a BS in education.
Okay, well then I'm sure you'd have some matriculated, and what you wouldn't, you could take. And within a year and a half, you then have a qualified background, and you could earn yourself a decent living, generally anywhere from, at the low end, $50 to the high, $100, $150 a consultation to help people, and people are more than willing to pay that because it's reasonable. It deals with prevention and lifestyle modification. You're not practicing medicine, but you're guiding people into healthier choices.
Oh, that sounds great.
And it is, healthcare is the really solid career of the future.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, thank you.
All the best to you.
Bye.
Let's say hello to... Well, who do we have now? We have, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take some more calls because I had so many people lined up there, they now have to get new ones up. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. While you're doing that, let's go to our environmental segment. Here's the environmental segment. This is from Professor Harvey Wasserman. Quote, why we should fear the worst from Fukushima. Fukushima's missing melted cores and radioactive gushers continue to fester in secret. Japan's harsh dictatorial censorship has been matched by a global corporate media blackout aimed successfully at keeping Fukushima out of the public eye. But that doesn't keep the actual radiation out of our ecosystem or our markets or our bodies. Speculation on the ultimate impact ranges from the utterly harmless to the intensely apocalyptic. But the basic reality is simple. For 7 decades, the government bomb factories and privately owned reactors have spewed massive quantities of unmonitored radiation into the biosphere. The impacts of these emissions on human and ecological health are unknown, primarily because the nuclear industry has resolutely refused to study them. Indeed, the official presumption has always been that showing proof of damage from nuclear bomb tests and commercial reactors falls to the victims, not the perpetrators, and that, in any case, the industry will be held virtually harmless. This see no evil, pay no damages mindset dates from the bombing of Hiroshima to Fukushima to the disaster coming next. So here are some reasons why this radioactive legacy demands we prepare for the worst, for our oceans, our planet, our economy, and ourselves. At Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945, the U.S. military initially denied there were any radioactive fallout at all, or that could cause any damage. And despite an absence of meaningful data, the victims, including a group of U.S. prisoners of war and their supporters, were officially discredited and scorned. Likewise, when Nobel winners Linus Pauling and Andrew Sakharov correctly warned of massive global death toll from atmospheric bomb testing, they were dismissed with official contempt until they won in the court of public opinion. And during and after the bomb tests from 1946 to 1963, downwinders in the South Pacific and the American West, along with thousands of U.S. atomic veterans, were told their radiation-induced health problems were imaginary until they proved utterly irrefutable. When British doctor, who I put into one of my documentaries before she died, Dr. Alice Stewart, proved in 1956 that any even tiny X-ray doses to pregnant mothers could double the childhood leukemia rates, she was assaulted with 30 years of heavily funded abuse from the nuclear and medical establishments. But Stewart's finding proved tragically accurate and helped set in stone the medical health physics consensus: there is no safe dose of radiation and that pregnant women should not be X-rayed or exposed to equivalent radiation. More than 400 commercial power plants have been injected into our ecosystem with no meaningful data to measure their potential health and environmental impacts, and no systematic global data base has been established or maintained. What is called acceptable dose standards for commercial reactors were conjured from faulty A-bomb studies begun 5 years after Hiroshima, but there is no science to them. Bomb reactor fallout delivers alpha and beta particle emitters that enter the body and do long-term damage, but which industry backers often wrongly equate with less lethal gamma X-ray doses from flying in airplanes or living in Denver. By refusing to compile long-term emission assessments, the industry systematically hides health impacts at Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and Fukushima, forcing victims to rely on isolated, independent studies, which automatically they call discredited. Human health damage has been amply suffered in radium watch-style painting, bomb production, uranium mining and milling, and enrichment, waste management, and other radioactive work, despite decades of relentless industry denial. Dr. Ernest Sternglass, who had worked with Albert Einstein, warned that reactor emissions were harming people. Thousands of copies of his low-level radiation book mysteriously disappeared from their primary warehouse. And when the Atomic Energy Commission Chief Medical Officer Dr. John Goffman urged that reactor doses levels be lowered by 90%, he was forced out of the Atomic Energy Commission and publicly attacked, despite his status as a founder of the industry, a member of the Manhattan Project, and a medical doctor responsible for pioneering research into the LDL cholesterol. Dr. Goffman later called the reactor industry an instrument of premeditated mass murder. STAC monitors and other monitoring devices failed at Three Mile Island in 1979, making it impossible to know how much radiation escaped, where it went, or who it impacted and how. So these are some of the reasons why we have been lied to repeatedly by the people who control the nuclear industry, and we should be very concerned. Let's say hello to David from Portland, Oregon. Hi, David. David, your turn. You're on the air. Please speak up. You got it. David, oh, we're going to have to take another call. Let's say hello to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, boy, you've got people listening all over the place.
Yeah.
I've got one better here. I've got a Punit from India. He says he's been listening to you from India for about 10 years. And he says, I apply all the information you share, and I just wanted to let you know that you are spot on about the concept of the more money you make, the more diabetes, heart disease, and cancer you suffer from. In India, it's obvious when you go from the city into the country and you see how sick people are in the cities and how relatively healthy they are out in the country. And you said it's interesting when you talked about last week how misogynist and sexist Indians are. And he says, I want you to know that you're grossly understating it. And he says, one of the things I'd like to hear about is the concept of infanticide, especially among the affluent and well-educated. Could you address that?
I believe that this is the single worst atrocity committed in the world today. The figures are startling. In India alone, in just the last 20 years, the most conservative estimate is that 10 million girls have been murdered.
Wow.
Now, but that's a conservative figure. I have seen figures as high as 200 million when you add in China. But in China, it's a relatively recent phenomena because of the one-child policy. But there is this secret genocide that is not being reported for political reasons, and it should be. In fact, there's 5 million girls killed every year in India. Let me repeat that. 5 million girls are murdered each year in India, and not a thing is done about it. And all you have to do is look at the statistics. SaveTheGirlChild.com will explain that to you. There was one parent who was filmed for a documentary I saw that showed that she was smiling as she talked about killing 11 of her newborn girls, hoping for a boy. Why are people killing them? And this is not about lowly educated people who need good education. Right now, the number one people killing in India are highly educated people because they get the ultrasound. They can afford an ultrasound, even though it's against the law, but that doesn't mean anything in India because it's one of the most corrupt country in the world. It may have the largest democracy, but it's the most corrupt democracy. Everything is corrupt in India. And so what you have is you have a family going to the OGBYN, and if it's the ultrasound shows that it's a girl, they're aborted. Even though that's against law, it doesn't mean anything. You pay cash, and it's done. Doctors are never prosecuted. And then in the poorer families, if it is a girl, you're brought pressure to kill the kid. Now, there's three ways they do it. One, they simply abandon the child in some garbage heap and it dies. Two, they take a wet cloth and put it over the child's face and it suffocates. Or three, they strangle it. But it's done so frequently every day in so many places. The Hindus doing this. Muslims don't do this. Sheikhs don't do this. Jains don't do this. Buddhists don't do this. The Hindus do. And shame on them, and shame on the idea that it's cultural. Why? Because girls are not valued. Because a woman's place in India is to serve the man. She's a breeding machine. There are many feminist groups in India, and they've been fighting for this. Who do you think killed Gandhi? Gandhi was killed by a group of highly nationalistic and radicalized, ultra-conservative of the Brahmins. It's a class society. And when the Brahmins, who had been the last group to maintain power before the English took power, they expected to come back in and reestablish their power. Gandhi was out there trying to give rights to women, stop some of these barbaric things, and try to recognize that all classes, including the so-called untouchables, the untouchables, you couldn't hold any important position. Even walking down the street, they were supposed to ring a bell so that their shadow did not cross anyone else's, because then you would be considered unclean if an untouchable even came near you. They were only allowed to do things like clean out toilets or the streets. Gandhi said they're human beings, and they didn't like that. That's why they had him killed, because the person who actually killed Gandhi had actually tried before to kill him, had actually been arrested for trying to stab him, and yet he was a part of that whole Brahmin cult. In any case, so here you have up to 200 million children, babies, killed, all girls, by the Chinese and the Indians, and you don't see a word about it. Now, that means that more babies have been killed by the Chinese and by the Indians than all of the casualties in the First World War, the Second World War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War combined. I mean total casualties, not just battlefield, but all the other people who died because of the consequences of war. And you don't hear a word about it. That's how much censorship goes into this, because if you looked at this and you saw this is across all spectrums, and because the value of the boy is that the boy carries on the family name, inherits the land in his name, and establishes the tradition and carries on the tradition for the family. The girl does not. And many of the girls that are not killed are frequently abused and put to work in terrible child labor situations or sold off into prostitution. So if we had to make it a part of our policy of doing business, foreign business, with a country as to how it treated its children, then we wouldn't do any business at all with India or with China. Hope that answers the question.
Wow. You never hear that anywhere else.
5 million they kill each year. This is not a few incidents. It's across all spectrum of Indian society. It's genocide. So who speaks for the girls who are aborted? Who speaks on behalf of those who are killed after they're born? Who speaks for those that are put into slave labor, working in brick factories, weaving factories, or who speaks for those young girls when they're sold into sexual trafficking?
Well,
Not our president, not our Secretary of State, no. No, they wouldn't think of doing something actually decent and ethical. Thank you for your call.
Okay.
We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. I'm Gary Nolan.